Episode 11, Van Helsing's Plan. Dr. Van Helsing now prepares to hunt the vampire. He has combined the journals, letters, and diaries of Jonathan Harker, Mina Harker, Dr. Seward, and Lucy Westenra. This information will now be used in the effort to destroy the Count. Van Helsing has called everyone together, including Arthur Holmwood and Quincy Morris, to the asylum to make clear his plan.
Dr. Seward's Diary, 30 September, 1897.
I returned to the asylum at 5 o'clock and found that Holmwood and Morris had not only arrived, but had already studied the transcript of the various diaries and letters which Harker and his wonderful wife had made and arranged. Van Helsing had sent Harker to trace the movements of the Count's 50 boxes of unholy earth, and he had not yet returned from his visit to the carrier's men. Those on hand settled into a late tea, and when we had finished, Mrs. Harker said,
Dr. Seward, may I ask a favor? I want to see your patient, Mr. Renfield. Do let me see him. What you have said of him in your diary interests me so much.
Mrs. Harker, Mina, beyond these rooms, my world is not a welcome sight. But then Renfield is somehow involved.
We could go to him now before Dr. Van Helsing and Jonathan return.
With this, we made our way out of the sitting room and descended into the holding area of the asylum and to Renfield's cell.
Mr. Renfield? Mr. Renfield?
What?
A lady would like to see you.
Why?
She is going through the house and wants to see everyone in it.
Oh, very well. Let her come in by all means. But just wait a minute till I tidy up the place.
His method of tidying was peculiar. He simply swallowed all the flies and spiders in the boxes before I could stop him. It was quite evident that he feared or was jealous of some interference. When he had got through his disgusting task, he said cheerfully,
Let the lady come in.
Good evening, Mr. Renfield.
You know my name, then?
Oh, yes. Dr. Seward has told me of you.
You're not the girl Lucy, are you? You can't be, you know, for she's dead.
Oh, no. I am Mrs. Harker.
Then what are you doing here?
My husband and I are staying on a visit with Dr. Seward.
A moment, please, Mr. Renfield. How did you know about Lucy?
What an asinine question.
I don't see that at all, Mr. Renfield.
You will, of course, understand, Mrs. Harker, that when a man is so loved and honored as our host is, everything regarding him is of interest in our little community. Since I myself have been an inmate of a lunatic asylum, I cannot but notice that the sophistic tendencies of some of its inmates lean towards the errors of non cosce in ignoratio elenchi.
I positively opened my eyes at this new development. Here was my own pet lunatic, the most pronounced of his type that I had ever met with, talking elemental philosophy, and with the manner of a polished gentleman. We continued to talk for some time, and seeing that he was seemingly quite reasonable, she ventured, looking at me questioningly as she began, to lead him to his favorite topic, eternal life.
Why, I myself am an instance of a man who had a strange belief. Indeed, it was no wonder that my friends were alarmed and insisted on my being put under control. I used to fancy that life was a positive and perpetual entity, and that by consuming a multitude of live things, no matter how low in the scale of creation, one might indefinitely prolong life, relying, of course, upon the scriptural phrase, for the blood is the life.
I was so amazed at Renfield's mental clarity that I barely knew what to either think or say. It was hard to imagine that I had seen him eat up his spiders and flies not 5 minutes before.
Doctor?
Yes, of course. I say, Mrs. Harker, by my watch, it is time to go to the station to meet Van Helsing. I'm afraid we must go.
Very well. Goodbye, Mr. Renfield. I hope I may see you often, under auspices pleasanter to yourself.
Goodbye, my dear. I pray God I may never see your sweet face again. May he bless and keep you.
Ah, friend John, how goes all? Well, so, I have been busy. All affairs are settled with me, and I have much to tell. Madam Mina is with you?
Yes, she is here.
And her so fine husband? And Arthur and my friend Quincy, they are with you too?
Yes, everyone is at hand.
Good.
Come, here is the carriage. I have information for you.
What have you discovered?
You recall Harker's estate purchase for the Count?
One main, two satellite, yes?
Correct. The main house...
is where?
It is... Carfax.
Carfax? The place beside the asylum? Oh, that we had known it before. For then, we might have reached him in time to save poor Lucy. Ah... poor Miss Lucy. But no, we shall not think of that. We must go on our way to the end.
Then he fell into a silence that lasted till we entered my own gateway. Before we went to prepare for dinner, he said to Mrs. Harker,
I trust, Madam Mina, that you have kept in exact order all things that have been up to this moment?
Not up to this moment, Professor, but up to this morning.
But why not up to now? We have seen hitherto how good light all the little things have made. We have told our secrets, and yet no one who has told is the worse for it.
I precede you, Dr. Van Helsing. Will you read this and tell me if it must go in? It is my record of today. I, too, have seen the need of putting down at present everything, however trivial. But there is little in this except what is personal. Must it go in?
It need not go in if you do not wish it. But I pray that it may.
Very well. It is done.
And so now, up to this very hour, all the records we have are complete and in order. The professor took away one copy to study after dinner and before our meeting, which is fixed for 9 o'clock. The rest of us have already read everything, so that when we meet in the study, we shall all be informed as to the facts and can arrange our plan of battle with this terrible and mysterious enemy.
Mina Harker's Journal.
When we met in Dr. Seward's study 2 hours after dinner, we unconsciously formed a sort of board or committee. Professor Van Helsing took the head of the table, and he bade me sit next to him on his right to keep the journal. Jonathan sat next to me. Opposite us were Arthur Homewood, Dr. Seward, and Quincy Morris.
I may, I suppose, take it that we are all acquainted with the facts that are in these papers. This being so, I think good that I tell you something of the kind of enemy with which we have to deal. I shall then make known to you something of the history of this man, this Dracula. The Nosferatu do not die like the bee when he stings once. He is only stronger and being stronger, have yet more power to work evil. This vampire which is amongst us is of himself so strong in person as 20 men. He is of cunning more than mortal, for his cunning be the growth of ages. He have still the aids of necromancy, all the dead that he can come nigh to are for him at command. He can, within limitations, appear at will when and where and in many of the forms that are there for him. He can, within his range, direct the elements, the storm, the fog, the thunder. He can command all the meaner things, the rat and the owl and the bat and the wolf. He can grow and become small. And he can at times vanish and come unknown. How then are we to begin our work? How shall we find him? And having found him, how can we destroy him? My friends, this is much. It is a terrible task that we undertake, and there may be consequence to make the brave shudder. For if we fail in this our fight, he must surely win. And then, where end we? Life is nothing's, I heed him not. But to fail here is not mere life or death. It is that we become as him, that we henceforth become foul things of the night like him, without heart or conscience, preying on the bodies and the souls of our fellows. But we are face to face with duty, and in such case, must we shrink? For me, I say no. But then, I am old and life lie far behind. You others are young. Some have seen sorrow, but there are fair days yet in store. What say you all? Mr. Harker?
I stand with you until the destruction of this monster is complete.
Madam Mina?
I am here to the end.
Arthur?
Professor, we could not begin soon enough.
Mr. Morris, how is your taste for adventure?
Count me in. And I agree with Arthur. The sooner we get after this man, or whatever it is, the sooner we can put him down for good.
And you, friend John?
I did not believe. I did not want to believe. But now I see that it is true. Count Dracula must be destroyed. Yet I do not see how we are to proceed.
We are not without strength. We have on our side power of combination, a power denied to the vampire kind. We have sources of science. We are free to act and think, and the hours of the day and night are ours equally. These things are much. The Nosferatu does flourish when he can be fattened on the blood of the living. Cannot flourish without this diet. He eat not as others. He throws no shadow. He make in the mirror no reflect. He can come in mist which he create, but from what we know, the distance he can make this mist is limited, and it can only be round himself. He come on moonlit rays as elemental dust. He can, when once he find his way, come out from anything or into anything. Ah, but hear me through. He can do all these things Yet he is not free. He is even more prisoner than the slave of the galley, than the madman in his cell. He may not enter anywhere at the first, unless there be someone of the household who bid him to come. His power ceases at the coming of the day. If he be not at the place to where he is bound, he can only change himself at noon, or at exact sunrise or sunset. These things are we told, and in this record of ours we have proof by inference. Thus, whereas he can do as he will within his limit, when he have his earth home, his coffin home, his hell home, a place unhallowed, still, at other time, he can only change when the time come. It is said, too, that he can only cross running water at the slack or the flood of the tide. Then, there are things which so affect him that he has no power, as the garlic that we know of, and as for things sacred, as my crucifix. In their presence, he take his place far off and silent with respect. The branch of wild rose on his coffin keep him that he move not from it. A sacred bullet fired into the coffin kill him so that he be true dead. And as for the stake through him, we know already of its peace, for the cut off head that giveth rest. We have seen it with our eyes. Thus, when we find the habitation of this man that was, we can confine him to his coffin and destroy him, if we obey what we know.
Whilst Van Helsing was talking, Quincy was looking steadily at the window, and now he got up quietly and went out of the room.
Now, we must settle what we are to do. We have here much data, and we must proceed to lay out our campaign. We know from the inquiry of Jonathan that from the castle to Whitby came 50 boxes of earth, all of which were delivered at Carfax. We also know that at least some of these boxes have been removed. Our first step should be to ascertain whether all the rest remain in the house beyond that wall where we look today, or whether any more have been removed.
What in the name of...
It's Quincy. What on earth is he doing out there?
Sorry. I didn't mean to alarm you folks. It was an idiotic thing of me to do, I suppose, but the fact is that while the professor was talking there, came a big bat, and it sat on the windowsill. I got a real horror of the damn brutes from recent events, and I just can't stand them. And I went out to have a shot.
Did you hit it?
I don't know. I suppose not. It flew away into the woods yonder.
Very well. Come and sit.
Sorry about the window, Doc.
Yes, well, perhaps you would holster that weapon.
Gentlemen, please. We must trace each of these boxes, and we must either capture or kill this monster in his lair, or we must, so to speak, sterilize the earth so that no more he can seek safety in it. Thus, in the end, we may find him in his form of man between the hours of noon and sunset, and so engage with him when he is at his most weak.
And where do we begin this search?
There. At Carfax.
As there is no time to lose, I vote we have a look at this house right now. Time is everything with him. And swift action on our part may save another victim.
Just as we were about to leave the house, an urgent message was brought to me from Renfield. He wanted to know if I would see him at once, as he had something of the utmost importance to say to me. Van Helsing and the rest insisted upon coming along to Renfield's cell. We found him in a state of considerable excitement.
Oh, hello, gentlemen. Dr. Van Helsing. Dr. Seward. I feel that I am completely recovered, and I should like to be released from the asylum and sent home. At once, if you don't mind.
If I don't mind?
Your friends will perhaps not mind sitting in judgment of my sanity. By the way, you have not introduced me.
I was so much astonished that the oddness of introducing a madman in an asylum did not strike me at the moment. And besides, there was a certain dignity in the man's manner, so much of the habit of equality, that I at once made introductions. You, of course, know Professor Van Helsing.
Yes, yes.
Lord Godalming, Mr. Quincy Morris of Texas. Mr. Renfield.
Lord Godalming, I had the honor of seconding your father at the Wyndham. I grieve to know, by your holding the title, that he is no more. He was a man loved and honored by all who knew him, and in his youth was, I have heard, the inventor of a burnt rum punch much patronized on Derby night.
I think we were all staggered. For my own part, I was under the conviction, despite my knowledge of the man's history, that his reason had been completely restored. But I did not speak my mind.
Mr. Renfield, you seem well.
Why, thank you, Professor. May I go?
Perhaps we can speak of it in the morning, eh?
But I fear, Dr. Van Helsing, that you gentlemen hardly apprehend my wish. I desire to go at once here, now, this very hour, this very moment, if I may. I am sure it is only necessary to put before so admirable a practitioner as Dr. Seward so simple, yet so momentous a wish, to ensure its fulfillment. Is it possible that I have erred in my supposition?
You have.
Then, I suppose I must only shift my ground of request. Let me ask for this concession, boon, privilege, what you will. I am content to implore in such a case, not on personal grounds, but for the sake of others. I am not at liberty to give you the whole of my reasons, but you may, I assure you, take it from me that they are good ones, sound and unselfish, and spring from the highest sense of duty.
Mr. Renfield, I believe I follow your mind, but can you not tell frankly your real reason for wishing to be free tonight? I will undertake that if you will satisfy me, a man without prejudice and with the habit of keeping an open mind, Dr. Seward will give you, at his own risk and on his own responsibility, the privilege you seek.
I cannot say it.
Come, sir. If you will not help us in our effort to choose the wisest course, how can we perform the duty which you yourself put upon us? Be wise and help us, and if we can, we shall aid you to achieve your wish.
Your argument is complete, and if I were free to speak, I should not hesitate a moment. But I am not my own master in the matter. I can only ask you to trust me. If I am refused, the responsibility does not rest with me.
I thought it was now time to end the scene, so I went towards the door, beckoning the others to follow. But then, a new change came over the patient. He moved towards me so quickly that for the moment I feared that he was about to make another homicidal attack. My fears, however, were groundless.
Let me entreat you, Dr. Seward. Oh, let me implore you to let me out of this house at once. Send me away how you will and where you will. Send keepers with me, with whips and chains. Let them take me in a straight waistcoat, manacled and leg-ironed. But let me go out of this place. You don't know what you do by keeping me here. I am speaking from the depths of my heart, of my very soul. By all you hold sacred, by all you hold dear, take me out of this and save my soul from guilt. Can't you hear me, man? Can't you understand? Will you never learn? Don't you know that I am sane and earnest now? That I am no lunatic in a mad fit, but a sane man fighting for his soul?
Renfield, tell me that which I must know.
I cannot.
Then you are doomed.
You do not know his power.
Come, no more of this. We have had quite enough already. Get to your bed and try to behave more discreetly. He suddenly stopped and looked at me intently for several moments. Then, without a word, he rose and, moving over, sat down on the side of the bed. The collapse had come, as on the former occasion, just as I had expected. When I was leaving the room, he said to me in a quiet, well-bred voice,
"You will, I trust, Dr. Seward, do me the justice to bear in mind that I did what I could to convince you tonight."